I think we're set, Esther. Go ahead. Good morning. It's 10 a.m. on Wednesday, November 21st, 2007. The commission is meeting today in the State Capitol Building, 12th floor. And this is our regularly scheduled meeting at this time. My fellow commissioners are with me. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald, and Commissioner Kevin Kramer and Commissioner Tony Clark are also present today. Any welcoming comments from my fellow commissioners?
No, just to welcome everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. And
safe travels.
Safe travels, yeah. Mm-hmm. Looks like it's going to be good weather for traveling.
Good morning. Welcome. Happy Thanksgiving.
And now we need a motion for the consent agenda.
I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. SW1, I move the commission adopt the order and issue a certificate of public convenience and necessity authorizing Otter Tail Corporation to construct and own a 40.5 megawatt portion of the 159 megawatt Langdon Wind Energy Center in Cavalier County, North Dakota. Case number PU07607.
Second.
Now, I'd just like to clarify what the commission is acting on here. This is not a part of the new siting case where Florida Power and Light has proposed to add an additional 40 megawatts of wind to the present site. This relates to the existing 159 megawatts of Langdon wind at the Langdon Wind Energy Center, and it's this is these 40.5 megawatts which Otter Tail proposes to construct, plans to construct and to own, and the commission needed to issue a PCNN for this portion because Otter Tail is under the jurisdiction of the commission and needs a PCNN to own and to operate this. And so we, on August the 9th, Otter Tail filed an application for this certificate. And on October 3rd, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, which provided until November 13th for receiving written comments or hearing requests. No response was received, and the commission can decide this matter without a hearing. Otter Tail did file on November the 16th with the commission a signed affidavit from Brian Morlock that set out a number of statements from the company that the commission then has on the record. And so therefore, everything seems to be in order. And so I hope that my fellow commissioners will approve this.
All in favor.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. SW2. These are, this is one fuel cost adjustment that relates to Northern States Power. The cost of purchased energy for billing during the month of November, it's going to be 2.812 cents for the cost of fuel this month in November. And as a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical NSP residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours will decrease by $2.30 for bills rendered in the month of November. And that ends the items in my portfolio. Thank you. Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. KC1. I move the commission adopt the order and issue a certificate of public convenience and necessity for TransCanada Keystone Pipeline LP to construct and operate a 30-inch, 218-mile crude oil pipeline with associated facilities and pipeline interconnections in North Dakota, case number PU07152.
Second.
this is, of course, the order granting PCNN for the Keystone Pipeline project. A public hearing was held July 23rd in Valley City on the application for the PCNN to construct 218 miles of 30-inch pipe as part of a transportation of Canadian crude oil from Alberta to Cushing, Oklahoma, and Patoka, Illinois. The notice of hearing identified the following two general issues to be considered in the matter. First of all, whether public convenience and necessity will be served by construction and operation of the pipeline facilities In other words, is there a need for the pipeline and is the proposed facility adequate? And two, whether the applicants are fit, willing, and able to provide the service. In other words, does the company have adequate technical management and financial capacity to do what they say they're going to do? On July 13th, we also granted the request to intervene by the Dakota Resource Council and its members, and they did, in fact, intervene in the case. The need for the Keystone Pipeline is dictated by four overriding issues. One, increasing Canadian crude oil supplies combined with insufficient export pipeline capacity. In other words, there's a lot of oil in Canada and not a lot of ways to get it here. There's an increasing crude oil demand in the United States coupled with decreasing domestic supply. The opportunity to reduce the United States' dependence on foreign offshore oil through increased access to stable, secure Canadian crude oil supplies, and finally, a demonstrated shipper interest in the Keystone Pipeline project. Keystone Pipeline serves a national interest by providing refineries and markets with access to Canadian crude oil to meet growing United States demand for petroleum products. According to the Department of Energy's Energy Information Administration, the United States' demand for petroleum products has increased by 3 million barrels per day over the past 10 years and is expected to increase further by approximately 5.3 million barrels per day over the next 20 years, which represents an average demand growth of about 265,000 barrels per day each year. Growing oil production in Canada has the potential to decrease the United States' dependency on crude oil from more unstable parts of the world. There was compelling testimony by Mark McKelkey, the director of the North Dakota Pipeline Authority of the Industrial Commission, where he testified that a direct benefit of the Keystone Pipeline is an additional delivery path for North Dakota-produced crude oil to access Midwest markets. As we know, a majority of our crude oil is shipped through the Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Nebraska pipeline infrastructure, referred to as the Guernsey Hub. We've talked about it a lot of times in this commission recently. As we know, it's filled to capacity with oil supplies from Canada. An indirect benefit of the Keystone Pipeline is the expected relief to current Guernsey Hub capacity strain. The result of the direct and indirect benefits of the Keystone Pipeline would be a potential for increased North Dakota crude oil production. McKelkey also stated that at least one North Dakota company has expressed an interest in connecting its facilities to the Keystone system. The evidence on the record, the testimony on the record, indicates that North Dakota produces about 100,000 barrels per day of crude oil. We know that that number has increased by about another 25,000 since this testimony. Capacity bottlenecks, as we also know, on present pipeline infrastructure have created a situation where North Dakota crude has suffered price penalties of $5 to $30 per barrel. Now, under North Dakota law, a common pipeline carrier that accepts the provisions of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 4919 shall agree expressly that it, without discrimination, will accept, carry, or purchase the oil of any person not the owner of any pipeline, operating in a lease or purchasing oil at prices and under regulations to be prescribed by the Commission. Keystone has agreed to accept the provisions of the North Dakota law. McKelkey testified that, according to the United States Department of Transportation, pipelines are the safest method of transporting petroleum products. He also stated that pipelines are the most efficient and economical method of shipping the large quantities needed by the United States on a daily basis. In addition, the Keystone Pipeline will provide the following economic benefits for North Dakota. Construction will involve two spreads in North Dakota with 500 to 600 workers for each spread. That is, two crews will be working at the same time with a total of 1,000 to 1,200 workers. An additional 20 workers will be hired for construction of each pump station. There are five pump stations planned for North Dakota. And 10 to 15% of the workforce will be hired locally, assuming they can find them. What do we have, 10,000 open jobs in North Dakota right now? Food and lodging for construction will be about $3.25 million. And based on 2005 property assessment and tax rate information, Keystone's North Dakota property taxes will be about $5.2 million in the first year after construction and will be continued to be paid over the lifetime of the pipeline. Direct and contract employees will be hired locally for pipeline operations, and Keystone will pay sales and use taxes. Now, regarding TransCanada's fitness, TransCanada has 36,500 miles of wholly owned pipeline and more than 50 years of pipeline construction and operating experience, including expertise in large diameter, cold weather pipeline design, construction, operation, and maintenance. They are Canadians, after all. TransCanada's 2006 annual financial report shows the following. They have nearly $26 billion in total assets, $7.5 billion in gross revenues, and over $1 billion in total net income. For the last 10 years, their unsecured debt has been rated as stable by both Moody's and Standard & Poor's, and they have shareholder equity of $7.7 billion for the year ending 2006. Therefore, the application, according to this order, should it receive at least two votes, is granted, and a certificate of public convenience and necessity is issued specific to this proceeding, and this is important, is conditioned upon, and its effectiveness is subject to, the Commission granting a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit for the specific corridor and route requested by Keystone in its application. In other words, this PCNN is conditioned on the site approval of the route corridor and the corridor certificate and the route permit being granted.
The that last portion that Commissioner Kramer mentioned is very important to this order. The company filed a very specific proposal for a PCNN, and in our order, in paragraphs, it talks about the application of TransCanada Keystone Pipeline for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate the Keystone Pipeline, approximately 218 miles of 30-inch crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Cavalier, Pembina, Walsh, Nelson, Steele, Barnes, Ransom, and Sargent counties is granted. So you see they had specific counties that they want this to go through, and they also had a very specific route that they wanted this to apply to. That's why the Commission has looked very carefully at the language that we're putting in ordering paragraph number 3. The Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, number 5335, specific to this proceeding, is conditioned upon, and its effectiveness is subject to, the Commission granting a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit for the specific corridor and route requested by Keystone in its application for a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. What that means is, if the Commission changes the route in any way, the company will need to come back in and get another different PCNN.
It does pay to keep in mind that you can receive a certificate of public convenience and necessity and never meet the siting process, but you can't ever get to the siting process unless you get a certificate of public convenience and necessity. So this is a two-part process, and this is the first step, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee or bind the Commission on the second step. As Commissioner Kramer said, we really do have, and it pays to keep in mind that we have two standards of review and two things that we have to look at in any sort of hearing like this. The first is, as he said, is it in the public's convenience and necessity to have this built? And then the second standard is, do they have the ability and the fitness as a company to operate the particular infrastructure? For me, especially on when we look at the public's convenience and necessity, the overriding factor that I really took into consideration was the need for this country to get more and more stable supplies of crude oil. When you look at where this country gets its crude oil from, in large part, it's from some very scary neighborhoods in the world. All you need to do is turn on the radio and TV and look at Hugo Chavez or Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and you know that there are some scary neighborhoods out there that have crude oil that this country needs. And if you look, as the Commission did, at the record that was built before us, the increasing demand that the United States has, potential dwindling supplies in more stable areas of the world, it's pretty clear that we need to have access to North American crude. So this pipeline will help play an important role in shoring up what is getting to be really a very critical matter of national security. Add to that all the things that Commissioner Kramer talked about beyond the national interest in getting right into the state interest, the tax revenue that's generated, the jobs that will be created not only during construction, but jobs that are created after construction with pumping stations and things like that, and the fact that we're going to be getting the crude oil from somewhere. And this happens to be the safest means of getting the crude oil. You can rail it in over tanker cars, you can put it on semis, or you can put it through a pipeline. The record was very clear that this is the safest method of transporting the oil. Now, that's all separate, as I said, and bears repeating, that it's separate from whether this specific route is the route that's in the best public interest, and we'll continue to look at that and look forward to a good hearing here just a few days now.
The commission has in the past and will in the future give out PCNNs after we issue siting orders. That may happen with the one that we sited out in western North Dakota. But it is important that a company have both. And so it's just a matter of when the commission feels that it's ready to make a decision on this.
Some of the most compelling evidence, I thought, was the Energy Information Administration's Energy Outlook report, and showing that America's demand for petroleum products is not decreasing, but rather increasing. And I think it's also important to note, and that report talks about the fact that this isn't going to be, there's no silver bullets, and we've heard that many times. There are no silver bullets to meeting America's growing energy needs, but this is one part of it, along with renewables and, you know, whether it's biofuels or hydrogen cars or hydrogen cells, hybrid cars. Certainly conservation is an important part of it. But the growing demand for petroleum products itself is, in fact, a reality. This is a much safer and friendlier supply, I suppose you could say. And in addition, it does provide some release to that Guernsey hub constraint, which has direct value to North Dakota producers. It could, in fact, become a pipeline carrying some of North Dakota's crude. As we know, there is a pipeline that already goes from west to east that will cross this pipeline should it be built. I would say one thing, though, one area where I may disagree as a matter of law with my fellow commissioners or things that they've said this morning, I'm not so sure the company does need a PCNN. This is a common carrier. It meets common carrier, in my view, meets common carrier status by virtue of its presidential permit. And as according to U.S. law, I think had this PCNN been denied and the route permit and the corridor certificate granted, you know, I'm not so sure it wouldn't still be built. But that's a debate probably for some lawyers somewhere along the line over coffee.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, KC2 are some cost of gas adjustments, and I have actually all of our companies today. MDU is increasing its cost of gas charge by $1.678 per decatherm for natural gas. For residential consumption, representative of December, the cost of gas in the bill will be about $25.17 higher than last month, but still $30.09 lower than December of last year, reflecting, of course, that we have some greater supplies. Better market conditions for the consumers this year, but winter is still coming. NSP is increasing the cost of gas by $1.49.9 per decatherm compared to last month. That changes the residential customer cost of gas from $6.38 per decatherm to $7.88.66 per decatherm. This will raise the cost of gas in the bill by about $14.84 compared to last month, but it'll still be $8.36 lower than November of last year. Great Plains is increasing its cost of gas charge for residential customers by $1.59.7 per decatherm compared to last month. The cost of gas in the customer bill will change from $8.52 to $9.58 per decatherm. For a typical November residential consumption, the cost of gas in the bill will be about $14.94 higher than last month and $3.72 higher than November of last year. And MDU, finally, is increasing its propane cost of gas charge by $3.29.4 per decatherm compared to last month. That will change the cost of gas from $12.80 per decatherm to $16.09 per decatherm for Hedinger customers in December. For a residential customer usage representative of December, the cost of propane in the bill will be about $49.41 higher than last month and $70.29 higher in December of last year. Of course, keeping in mind that propane, the price of propane is pulled up or down by the price of oil to a much greater degree than is natural gas, giving some fairly obvious, I think, characteristics. That ends the items of my portfolio.
Okay, thank you very much. And next we'll go to Commissioner Clark, who has some announcements regarding grain elevator statistics, one of our favorite topics here.
I don't have any items in my portfolio, but thank you, Commissioner. As you know, a few weeks ago we set a new record for grain storage capacity, both total and ground storage in North Dakota, and the number keeps continuing to rise. So we have a new state record for grain storage. It's 343,463,873 bushels of licensed grain capacity. That's 13.4 million more than November 1, which was the previous record. As far as a breakdown of where that new capacity is coming from, 5.7 million is bunker storage, 2.3 million is ground storage, and an additional 5.3 million of internal or permanent storage. To me, maybe the most remarkable thing about this, besides just the historic shift that we're seeing here in the licensed amount of grain, is that a few years ago, had we had this amount of grain being stored on the ground, we would probably all be piling into airplanes with grain dealers and farmers from across the state and heading to Washington, D.C. to lobby the Surface Transportation Board and beating up on the railroads. You don't see that happening this year. The reason is because, one, is as you talk to folks in the grade train industry, I think most are pretty understanding of the position that the railroads have been put in this year and think that given the historic volumes of grain and the prices that are out there, they've done an adequate job of attempting to meet that need and, in fact, got out in front of it in a lot of ways early on and really communicated well with folks in the ag industry in the state. And I really appreciate that communication from the railroad. This time around, I think it helped a lot. And two, it is this historic change in the grain industry in North Dakota. You're switching to increasingly, although wheat is still our number one commodity and small grains are and probably always will be, it's a large shift to corn. Corn acres yield about four times what a small grain yield would be when you just look at volume of the product itself. You see ethanol taking off. It's got different transportation logistics to it, and so the grain elevator industry is responding. They're licensing a lot of ground storage, but they're also building a bunker storage, which is kind of a long-term temporary storage fix, and it's putting in a lot more license capacity, just plain old building new elevators, and our inspectors have indicated to us that as they travel around, they're seeing a lot of it. New bins going up, you know, some of it steel, some of it actually large concrete facilities. So,
didn't corn actually produce?
Did it as far as just pure yield?
I heard that.
Maybe just spring wheat. Yeah, Durham.
Just spring wheat. Yeah, not if you throw all wheat, throw a Durham in there.
Okay, and I just want to note that we have a number of meetings that will be held next week. We have a rulemaking starting on Monday at 1 p.m. And that deals with quite a number of rules, gas safety, gas and electric accounting issues, electric public utility issues, siting issues, smart metering standard, wind turbine decommissioning, reclamation change in who can bond, weights and measures proposals, quite significant. Then on November the 27th, we start our hearing. Continuing our hearing on the Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline. That will start at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, and we anticipate that it will go through 5:30 on Wednesday evening. So the other meetings that the Commission has scheduled are listed in our formal agenda.
Now holiday siesta for the PSC. That rulemaking is probably the most significant one that we've undertaken since I've been on the Commission. It's been a long time.
All right, let's take questions.
Isn't the PCNN, to put it crudely, isn't the PCNN useless to TransCanada without the route and corridor permit?
It is. Certainly. It is in this case because we have said that it's conditioned upon and its effectiveness is subject to the Commission granting a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit.
It would be anyway.
I was just curious about, not that I want to discourage anyone from talking, but you spent a long time reading an order that you could go, and wipe yourself with for all of the good it does for the company.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, because I disagree with Commissioner Kramer's analysis of the value of it. I mean, if they don't get it, they don't move to stage two. And we could fight about, you know, whether.
I mean, if Commissioner Kramer, if the PCNN, if in your opinion the company doesn't need a PCNN, why does it need a route and corridor permit too? I mean, it wouldn't the same logic apply to that?
The bottom line is they need a route permit and a corridor certificate. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And that's where our real charge is to protect the environmental, cultural, and human resources of our state. And that's done in that process of siting. The Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, to me, it's a critical thing if you're doing an energy conversion facility in the state, for example, or an perhaps more of an intrastate transmission facility. I question, my question of it from a legal standpoint, the necessity standpoint, is whether it's necessary in an international, interstate pipeline. But the fact of the matter is the company applied for one.
And it implies then that they'll be filing a tariff in North Dakota because they have they can offer services here.
See, my argument to that is that I believe that this PCNN is not about establishing Keystone as a common carrier pipeline. I believe that's established without this PCNN. So, if in fact that's even the reason that they applied for it. But, you know, oftentimes companies or individuals, for that matter, will do more than is necessary from a regulatory standpoint to meet the laws and the traditions of a jurisdiction, and perhaps that's what they did in this case.
I wondered, when we talk about the factors in a PCNN in mm-hmm. this case, how much analysis is done as far as the one factor you mentioned, you can have a pipeline or you can have railroad cars
sure.
or you could have trucks, and is there any consideration given to what the alternatives would be and the relative hazards posed by each one?
To me, it's one of the most compelling parts of this application. Because, you know, and it's not just this particular one. The one that we issued last week for the 32 miles in the, for True Oil in the, what's it called?
Belfouche.
The Belfouche pipeline. Similar circumstances, except there we were actually, as a state, experiencing the consequences of inadequate pipeline capacity by seeing trucks, you know, tanker trucks, hauling oil from Bowman County up to the northwestern part of the state to get on the Enbridge system.
However, we still haven't awarded that PCNN. That still should be coming. Mm-hmm.
What I was thinking of is that, like the City of Fargo's argument, and I understand it, is that, you know, this pipeline will could interfere with our water supply. Mm-hmm. Well, what would
yeah,
be
a tanker
case,
going
what would be
the
case
red.
If you had 8,000 tanker trucks going through Fargo?
There's no question about it, Dale. I think that's pretty important information.
I mean, it obviously the commission is bound to the record that's before it. So to the degree that this was brought up as an issue at the hearing and entered into evidence, it becomes something that the commission weighs. It was something that I weighed pretty heavily because it is pretty clear. You're going to have the oil one way or another at some price or another. And when you look at from an efficiency standpoint, it was clear from the experts who testified it's the most cost-effective and efficient way of transporting crude oil, but it was also very clear from the evidence that was submitted that it's the safest way of transporting it. Now, as I said, we still have to do our due diligence on the siting side of things. It doesn't abdicate that responsibility whatsoever, but it's an important thing that I think we take into consideration, whether we look at whether a pipeline like this is, in fact, in the public's convenience and necessity.
I'm sorry, I had something in my mind that's left.
You know, one of the things
else?
I would say, Dale, with regard to the PCNN, that where it does have some value is that you do get the company on record agreeing to things that they would probably have to agree to anyway if they're common carrier, obviously. But when you have them on the record, it gives the state extra, and by the way, in the state's producers, oil producers, a little bit of extra muscle, if you will, if in fact there should be a challenge to putting North Dakota crude on this pipeline, for example, because they have stated on the record that they will in fact adhere to the North Dakota Century Code common carrier pipeline responsibilities.
What's the likelihood that this will be done by December 12th? I mean, when I say this, I mean a decision
this whole
on a corridor route permit.
I think it's impossible almost.
I mean, when do you think it will be done?
It'd be hard to speculate on that.
We need to first have the hearing.
Yeah. You know, Dale, I would say this. A lot of work has been done to this point. None of that work is lost. And by work, I mean not only the hearings, not only the evidence, not only all the research and the reading that the commissioners and staff have done, but proposed findings of facts, conclusions of law, as it relates to the record to this point. All of that work is done, and that should certainly assist us in being able to, you know, do this in fairly quick order. But at the same time, we're not going to short the calendar or the responsibility by making it quick.
What kind of job is it going to be to site a Synfuels plant in a coal mine?
Well, as you know, our reclamation folks have already been, and not only reclamation, but permitting folks for upstairs for the coal mine, have already received contacts from the company regarding what information is going to be needed in a permit for a coal mine here in North Dakota. And they've been working with the company on making sure they have that correct information. Now, you could ask Jim Deutsch when he expects to receive that permit application, because I think he's already got some dates that he's heard from the company about that.
You know, on the mine reclamation side, it's something that we're pretty good at. I mean, we can do fairly efficiently because we do mine permitting on a very continuous basis. And I'll get to the other side of it, Alana. Don't worry, I'm not going to short Public Utilities Division here. I'm not done yet. But and so, I mean, that's an ongoing process.
A big process, and
they've been in contact with the Reclamation Division. Now, on the public utility side, we're getting even better at siting lately because we've been doing an awful lot of it. Now, one thing that I'm sure we'll probably go do is we'll go dust off the old Dakota Gas case, because this is the, you know,
and probably hire a consultant.
Yeah, this is the first time in 30 years we've as a commission, as a regulatory agency, have dealt with a Synfuels plant. And so there may be some unique things that we'll want to go back and look at what happened the first time around to see what types of questions were asked specifically. But when you look at it, the statute is the same. I mean, we're very comfortable with the statute. We're very comfortable with the processes that we have to go through to cite one of these. And it's looking at cultural, environmental resources, historic resources, impact on water and game and fish and things like that. I mean, in some ways, perhaps it's a little easier than, say, a long corridor, because you're dealing with a limited footprint.
However,
when you're talking about a plant, but as opposed to, you know, hundreds of miles of
water. We have not received even a letter of intent on this project.
Right. Well, we received the generation facility letter.
Yeah,
of intent.
But that was on a different type of generation.
But at any rate, Dale,
we haven't received anything. I would just want to make that clear.
I really look forward to receiving it, though, I have to say. I think from a public interest standpoint, from a public support standpoint, there are so many good things about this project on the surface, not the least of which is we have a finite and dwindling supply of natural gas in this country. We are looking at natural gas prices rising. Just from a consumer standpoint, the fact that there would be additional supply put into this region of a very important commodity is valuable. The other issue you have, different than especially an interstate pipeline, is that the facility is in fact in North Dakota. And I wasn't at the news conference yesterday, but I was at the Lignite Research Council meeting Wednesday, and the recommendation for financial support for the Great Northern Project was contingent on the project being built in North Dakota, not just using North Dakota lignite, but being built in North Dakota. So obviously there are a lot of economic values to that project. So, you know, we don't have a lot of facts on it. Obviously there hasn't, as Susan said, even been a letter of intent, but I'm very familiar with the project and look forward to receiving, getting into that process.
Well, the reason I ask is that, you know, the commission hasn't cited a coal plant or a Synfuels plant in 20 plus years, and how long does it take to get one's, you know, sea legs in a situation like that?
I think the factors that we look at are the same as the factors that we look at with any siting application. The difference is you're talking about a much smaller and compact footprint with either an electric generation plant or any sort of energy conversion facility. But the kinds of things that we look at are very similar.
You know, Dale,
and I do think that it will be important for the commission to consider hiring a consultant as we would go into this process, because although we have a very excellent and experienced staff, when you come up with a project like this, there's a tremendous amount of research that needs to be done, and so I think that that would be good for the commission to consider that.
Yeah, I honestly think that the air permit is going to be as big a challenge or bigger challenge than the siting process. That's still a fairly significant hurdle. Now, one thing I would say about the switch to a coal gasification process versus an electric generation process, that certainly the emissions are different. They're better, or at least not as bad, and as well as the profile of the actual facility. So its proximity to site view sheds or view sheds and its emissions are better.
Well, that's primarily why it was one of the things that interests me about the project is the closeness to the south unit of the park, and that's going to introduce a whole dynamic.
Yes, it is.
There's no question about it.
Yeah, and we had talked about that, I think, when it was originally filed as a letter of intent for the generation facility, so.
Do you have any questions, Janelle, before you need to leave? Okay. Anything further?
The meeting on December 6th, is that the one with Magellan and the pipeline companies?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. All right, anything further?
I wasn't at the meeting with that Byron Dorgan had the other day. Did that shed any light on the situation?
I was not at the meeting either, so I don't even know what you're... No, okay, sorry. Okay, that closes our question and answer period then.
I doubt it.
The commission will be... the commission will be adjourning for 5 minutes, and we'll be back at 2:15 after signing our papers for our admin meeting. Thank you.